we'll get started. Welcome to the Mystery College Podcast. Today we have a special guest, Amrita Baba. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Jake. Good to be with you.
Yeah, so could you share some of the inspiration behind having found Amrita Mandala and its core philosophy?
Well, that's quite a big question. You know, that it's a simple question and kind of easy to answer, but at the same time, it touches on so many things. So please bear with me. And bear also already apologies for former broken English. I try to manage with the 500-word vocabulary that I have. So inspiration behind Amrita Mandala. Well, the main purpose of the whole method is to have, this was years ago, about 15 years ago, one of my gurus asked me to put bits and pieces of wisdom practices that over time have been some of them forgotten, some of them scattered all over the world in different traditions, different systems. And he asked me to gather those bits and pieces and put them back together so that it would be like a, what's the word, like a practice approach that would be very easy to approach and very easy to practice. So that's basically what we do in Amrita Mandala. And it's not really, even though, you know, I started practicing formally when I was 6-7 years old in 1986. And before that, I had been having visitations of Mahasiddhas, these spiritual masters, for a few years, and it kept happening through my childhood and then into my youth, and then there was a break of that for several years, but then it started happening again. Like, I just started having these visitations by non-physical Mahasiddhas, you know, masters from Hindu tradition, Buddhist tradition, Taoist tradition. And so just to be clear, what I have done in Amrita Mandala, it's not like I have taken some bit of Taoism or Buddhism and Hinduism and then try to make a complete practice out of it, but I've kind of done it the opposite way. So through understanding the physical body, through understanding the subtle bodies and subtle energies, try to make sense of it all. And then receiving practices, you know, I started with so many physical teachers since I was a, you know, young kid. And then I had two heart teachers in the physical. And then most importantly, receiving teachings from my non-physical gurus. It's mostly because of my non-physical gurus and their transmissions that have really and are the glue in Amrita Mandala that really puts the whole thing together. And without them, I couldn't have done a percent of what I have and what I have accomplished in terms of putting the method together.
Yeah, that's amazing to receive transmissions from being spirits or people who are from other plane. And that's amazing that then those transmissions get to carry through and empower students, lay practitioners. So what are some ways that Amrita Mandala caters to the needs of modern day lay practitioners who are busy, they have, you know, lots of obligations? How do they benefit from the type of spiritual practices that you have to offer?
Well, one thing, first of all, I think that people aren't as busy as they think they are. And when it comes to, you know, there are different, should I say, levels how people can approach practice. You know, if it's something simple as secular mindfulness or, you know, transcendental meditation or something simple like that, then of course, somebody... But just for the sake of example, you know, using or following a simpler approach like that, of course you can kind of do it part-time or just, you know, have 20 minutes or 30 minutes a day for practice and then not bother about it. But Amrita Mandala is not like that because, basically everybody is welcome. Anybody is welcome to give it a go. But Amrita Mandala has been created for any modern people, you know, city people, to have a method that takes them from unawakened state through consecutive further stages to full enlightenment. And by full enlightenment, I mean wisdom through emptiness, which is a Buddhist principle, and then light body or rainbow body, which is also a Buddhist principle, but it's kind of like a Vajrayana or Tantric Buddhist principle. So wisdom body and light body. So because of this, because of how far Amrita Mandala can take the practitioner, is why there also needs to be like a, you know, first of all, practitioner who wants to attain full enlightenment has to understand what it is and what it is not. But then, first and foremost, one has to have like an internal inner need for it. So it is not like, that sounds kind of interesting. You know, I want to attain Buddhahood or full enlightenment and do it at the side of, you know, trying to put up a business, you know, or something like this. It's not really, maybe it could be. I don't really want to be too harsh in my definition, but it's all or nothing kind of thing, because you, full enlightenment or Buddhahood, Mahasiddhahood, it means that everything, all corners are covered. So that's why I say that, you know, you can't really do it part-time. So it doesn't mean that you have to be sitting on your butt meditating for more than a couple of hours or 1, 2, 3 hours a day, but it is also during activity, you know, practicing. And for tantrics, the main form of practice is mantras. And through saying mantras, feeling the shakti, feeling the spiritual energy that comes through it, the transmission that comes through it, and through feeling that energy and being in touch with it, accessing our own pure and perfect nature. So, yeah, it's kind of, to answer your question, you know, I'm fine if people come to Amrita Mandala and just want to get awakened. You know, we have a two-part formula for first awakening experience, or if they want to have any number of further awakening experiences without taking it to the goal. But just to be clear that as the founder and head teacher of this thing, that's the main purpose of Amrita Mandala. It's like a method for modern people who want to attain the same as past masters and Mahasiddhas have. So,
yeah. So that's wonderful. I really appreciate the spirit of generosity that's with Amrita Mandala, like, and seeing like students' potential to be masters themselves or to have the same attainments as predecessors.
Oh, that's a good question, good topic to cover, because that's what the whole tantric methodology has always been about. That's exactly like, if you start reading some of the recent tantric Buddhist masters or ancient tantric Buddhist masters or especially ancient Hindu masters, that's exactly what they say. That's their main point, main message, that, you know, you don't have to be a special person who can sit in full lotus for 12 hours a day, or, you know, you don't have to necessarily do long retreats or live in a cave away from the world. with Tantra, it's the opposite, because, you know, in Tantra, you embrace anything and everything. So, you know, you're it's perfectly fine to have enjoyments, to have sex life, to have a family, to have a partner. It's perfectly fine to, you know, all of these things, which is the opposite in renunciative view. You know, you keep all those things away from you. But in Tantra, it's the opposite. So it's a key point in all of Tantra that if we want to reach or uncover the full potential that we have, we need to do it in this life and not postpone it for later. So this is what all the Vajrayana masters say, that aim for enlightenment in this life and in this body, and not save it for later. Because what would be the point of saving it for later? It's our own potential, our own nature that we are uncovering, revealing. So why not reveal it in full?
Absolutely. Why not reveal it in full? I just love the spirit of generosity with the tantric tradition, and I appreciate you continuing that. So I'm wondering, and I love how open it is, and I also wonder how, like, what are some challenges that lay people or people with obligations, families, or people who may perceive that they're very busy, what are some challenges they may have in modernizing, like, tantric practices for today's world? Maybe not everyone's going to read, you know, 15th century sutra or learn Sanskrit. So what are some ways that they, you know, they don't need to do that, but then they can still attain the results?
Well, one really the core thing about the whole tantric vehicle, and this applies to all of Tantra, not only Amrita Mandala, and anybody is welcome to check it from any of the classics. But, you know, the main refuge for a practitioner in Tantra is the guru or the Satguru. And the definition of somebody who is a guru is that one needs to be, I said that full enlightenment consists of two parts. So there is the wisdom body and then the light body. And these two relate to two different subtle bodies that we have. Commonly spoken of astral body and causal body. What I mostly use, I speak of meridian system and nadi system. So two different types of channel systems. So for somebody to be a Mahasiddha or a guru, one has to have finished either of those systems, and preferably both of those. So first of all, just to be clear about the definition of the guru as a source of refuge that that student can take refuge. So by definition, guru is somebody who has unshakable experience of his or her basic state, his or her basic nature. And so in Tantra, in all of Tantra, the basic principle is that it is the guru or representative of guru who gives empowerments for students, empowerments, initiations. And this means that it is that empowerment that the guru gives which becomes, you know, it's all about empowering the student, right? You know, there is an energetic transmission of pure energy or shakti that is transmitted to the student, but it empowers the student. So it starts opening and revealing the student's own pure basic nature, right? So it's not like there is, from the perspective of our basic nature, it cannot be given to us. But isn't it the case that for people who are confused and stuck in the wheel inside their minds, inside their heads, that they can't, they don't know this basic nature of theirs. So in tantric yogas, it's the basic principle that that's the role and the purpose of guru, that the guru gives empowerments and transmissions and so-called pointing out instructions and direct introductions into this basic state so that the student can recognize his or her basic nature and then keep recognizing it, repeating that experience. So I started talking about the importance of guru and refuge. And here we come to the challenge in the modern world, which is that I think that the Western education is brilliant, you know, secular education. We learn how to read and write and do maths and learn geography and learn basic logic and, you know, ethics and many other things through our secular education. But there's one thing that is slightly problematic when it comes to Tantra, which is that there is like this over, how do you say it in English, like a over individualization that happens with Western people, and this reflects on their attitude. So Western, in other words, Western people have difficulty in surrendering. And surrendering is, very important when it comes to spiritual practice, tantric practice. Surrendering means having devotion, being committed. So this is definitely a challenge that I've seen over 15 years that I've taught full time. That's a challenge. And sometimes, anybody who commits to any type of path will have some difficulties and obstacles. But I think that I've seen this so many times over the years that that's why I mention it, that like this over-independence, over-individualistic view that at worst turns into pride and arrogance is a blind spot for Westerners. It's not a blind spot for Asian students. I also have some Asian students, and they are, it's not a problem for them, but it is for Western people.
That's a very useful insight to provide, that, you know, with Western cultures, individualization and ego can have, that can be a challenge, whereas with Eastern cultures, the idea, the concepts of surrendering and fully devoting to the system, the practice, is more readily accepted. So it's a good observation, since it's not our individual problem, it's a collective problem, ironically.
Yeah. For Westerners. So that's just one thing. Like, Western students also have like really big pros, because they have the ability to think for themselves. That's a huge, huge pro. But, usually Western people, when they come to practice, they have really, some of my students have sought for the method and sought a good teacher for many years, some of them over 20 years. Some of them even more. So, you know, then when they find it, of course, this happens to everybody. When you finally click with a method and find a teacher you want to practice with, same happened to me a couple of times, then you really commit to it. Yeah. So, and then you want to put in the hours of practice and want to put in the effort. So, Western people and modern people also have pros, not only that one con.
Yeah, I appreciate acknowledging like the strengths too, like the individualization can also lead to more like unique experiences or abilities to intellectualize the work in such a way that maybe good in a jhanic sense. One thing I really really appreciate about the what you offer is like that you do rainbow body transmissions, and like, you know, that's a very significant and generous thing to offer. As that's and some traditions, that's something people work up to after many years. So I'd love if you could share more about the rainbow body transmissions and what led you to help people with such a powerful vehicle.
Well, I remember His Holiness the Dalai Lama said that, not verbatim, but along the lines that the time of secrecy is over. And I agree with it mostly, but not fully. And I know that he also sees it that way. So he was perhaps making a bit of a like a simplification, saying that, you know, the reason why I say that is because also in his tradition, there are so-called secret practices that are not openly spoken about. But what was your first question?
So I suppose the first question was about what led you to offering the rainbow body as a transmission.
Well, the way I see it is that the way how I teach is that you know, we have retreats, monthly retreats, and have had for many years, both live and online. And to me, it's very simple. You know, I want to, like from my own perspective as a teacher, I don't feel like I want to hold back. I wanna be the kind of teacher who I would like to study with. So, you know, my teachers, Terayama Roshi from Japan, he passed away in 2007. And then I had Shivakami, who was from Shaiva tradition. She passed away in 2010. You know, they were both very open, very open, and didn't really hold back because they saw that I was ready. I had done so much preparation, like prepared the ground. So they just gave me stuff without reservations. So, yeah, I just want to do my job well. And especially when I see in students that they have a need. And they have commitment, and that they have their ears open. So they are not opinionated. This is what I was saying, that, you know, sometimes Westerners, they sometimes this is not, it doesn't happen to everybody, but sometimes Westerners don't realize that they have opinions when they should be listening.
Mm.
Yeah.
And sometimes opinions are kind of like cotton. Like, you can still hear, but it's distorted. It doesn't come through as clearly.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly like that.
So I'm wondering if you could share some insights into the growth of the Amrita Mandala community and its impact on people. Like, how does the community support each other in their spiritual journey together?
Well, we've had a Sangha community for, I don't know, over 10 years. And it's not a big Sangha. It's a small Sangha, just 70 people from around the world, from Europe, from US, some from Asia. Well, we have a clearly mapped path, clearly mapped. So we have, like I earlier mentioned, that I wanted to, my guru asked me to establish and figure out a system from unawakened state and through intermediate stages to full enlightenment. So this is what I have done over the last 20 years more. And at this point, we are at a stage where I was speaking about wisdom body through emptiness and then light body or rainbow body through the meridian system. So at this point, we have we are at a point when I actually just last month in January, I finished teaching all the practices for the light body, rainbow body path. I had already given the wisdom body emptiness teachings until early 2021. So at this stage, we have 22 people who have finished the wisdom body side of practices, and then we are still working on, I'm myself included, I'm still working on finishing meridian purification. So, but we are getting there. It's a pretty solid community. It's a small community still. So, of course, you know, we have books. I have written 3 books that are specifically about different stages of practice in a very, explained in a very open and pragmatic manner. So maybe listeners can look more details from those books free from the website.
Yeah, that's awesome. And what are some of your future visions of Amrita Mandala?
Future visions? Well, I have so many visions since when I started teaching a long time ago. And maybe I keep those details of those things in private. But, you know, I guess we just have to see. I live in Slovenia at the moment, and we have a like small ashram here, center here, with my companion. And we have people coming here visiting from different parts of the world on a regular basis. So I think that in near future, as the Sangha keeps growing, there will be like a residential training center. And I always had, just to like take a bit sidetrack, I would like to be able to run the mission on donation basis. Maybe it cannot be done because it's a capitalistic financing system, and my experiences so far on donation based Dharma activities are not good. You know, people just give coins, and you know, you can't pay the bills with coins alone. So, but anyway, I kind of have a dream of having a residential center that would be either free or very affordable, just like minimum payments. And I feel that my purpose in this life is to help people to attain full enlightenment, not only wisdom body, but light body specifically, rainbow body specifically. So I hope that I'm able to connect with people who are karmically connected to my gurus and myself, and just have opportunities to work with those students and those people from all over the world.
Beautiful. Beautiful. And are there any upcoming projects, retreats, courses, or teachings that you're enthusiastic about sharing or looking forward to?
Well, the next retreat will be in 2 weeks. So I don't really, we have, like I said, ongoing retreats every month or so, from 2 days to 4 or 5 days to 6 or 7 days. So yeah, I'm just looking forward to the next retreat.
Excellent. And you mentioned that you have some like courses or books as well. Would you mind sharing a little bit more about those?
Well, sure. I've released 3 books so far, and all of them are free of charge. They are actually on Amazon also, but so anybody who wants to buy them can get them from Amazon, but you can get all of them for free from the website, Amrita Mandala website. The first one is about awakening. The title is Awake, Handbook of Awakening. The second one is What's Next on Post-Awakening Practice, which, like the title suggests, it's about the process and path that comes after the first awakening experience. So, like I briefly referred, we follow a certain path map in our system. Like in different Tibetan systems and even Zen Buddhism, they have path maps, which means that you have definition and description of stages of the path, different stages up to full enlightenment. So in the case of Amrita Mandala, we have the so-called 13 Bhumi model. Bhumis are an ancient concept, an ancient practice, already known in Vedic times, long before Buddhism. And then when Buddhism came along, and especially Mahayana Buddhism, Buddhists started using it. But at this point in history, in Buddhism, you know, there are the classics, classic literature, but from Buddhist traditions, they have forgotten how bhumis work, how these different stages are mapped according to the bhumis. And what is interesting about bhumis is that these so-called bhumis or grounds, they relate to different layers in our energy body. So this is like a, it's not, when working with the 13 bhumis, you're working with 13 different vibratory areas of your energy system. So this is where it kind of becomes exceptional. If you look at the path maps used in different traditions around the world today, because you're reading your own energies and you're reading the energies of other practitioners. And that's how you do the mapping where you are on the path in relation to where the experience of full enlightenment is. So this is kind of specific to what we do in Amrita Mandala, but this was used in Mahayana and Vajrayana Buddhism at some point in history. But even the scholars, I've spoken to two of them, they don't know when they used those. But that's one of the things that I have revived in through our work.
Thank you for that revival. Is there anywhere where people can access your like website or social medias? Are you, like, what social medias are you on?
Personally, I'm only in Facebook. I'm not that fluent with technical stuff, although I used to. By education, I'm a music producer and musician, but I left music a long time ago. But back then, I used to be working with technical gadgets all day long. But, you know, it's been over 20 years since then. So now I'm kind of, I don't know, I'm really useless when it comes to technical stuff. So Facebook is the only thing I use personally. But we have Amrita Mandala page in Facebook. We have amritamandala.com website. We have Amrita Mandala YouTube. So those are few.
Awesome, man. Thank you so much for your time today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Jake.